10 years from today, the center of our digital lives will no longer be a smartphone, but a device that looks like ordinary eyeglasses. Except those glasses will have settings for virtual and augmented reality. What you really see and what's computer-generated will be mixed so tightly together that we won't really be able to tell what's real and what's illusion.
You're going to be able to do whatever you want with reality. You're going to be able to replace things that are not there. This allows you to do something. You and I could be playing chess right now, and when you make a move over there with a virtual set that's on your table with gestures, I will see that move in my set over here. This is really cool.
Shel Israel and Robert Scoble have been researching, writing, and speaking about technology's impact on the near-term future, together and separately since 2005. Shel is our guest today, once again, on the Middle Chamber Books and Music podcast. I'm your podcast host, Steve Lubetkin. Shel Israel, our guest today, and his co-author Robert Scoble are best known for two critically acclaimed best-selling tech business books, the 2006 book Naked Conversations, which is credited with explaining the business opportunities in social media, and Age of Context, which they wrote in 2012, that explained how the convergence of mobile, social media, the Internet of Things, data, and location technologies would forever change the relationships between businesses, customers, and stakeholders. Shel's written six previous books. He's been a previous guest on the Middle Chamber Books podcast. He's a contributor to Forbes, Fast Company, and Business Week, and has keynoted many business and tech conferences all over the world on all continents, as he says, not covered by ICE. They recently returned from a book tour to debut the book, The Fourth Transformation, in Australia, and we spoke with Shel from his San Francisco office over Skype.
Am I positioned right? Does my hair look right?
Oh, you're fine. Don't worry about hair. I don't have any either. And hair is irrelevant because this is an audio podcast, so seeing each other is just nice because we can sort of make eye contact.
And I took a shower for this.
All of that? You did all of that? Well, at some point, the things you talk about in the book are going to make that necessary, right?
The things we're talking about in the book would eliminate this because you'd be sitting in that chair over there. And when we want to do a fist bump, we can both do a fist bump and see each other. And we won't be separated by a screen. Now, if we do a fist bump, we're going to break our computer equipment.
That would seem to be the case.
Hi, Steve. Long time no see.
It's good to see you, Shel.
It seems for you and I to chat, I have to write a book. And, you know, getting any younger with these books, you know.
What can I tell you? You know, these are the price you have to pay for fame. But how are things going? You just got back from a book tour in Australia. How were things in Australia? How was the book received there?
Phenomenally. Seriously, phenomenally. Australia has become my off-Broadway. I've launched three books there for good reason. Number one, Aussies are very hungry to hear about the new technology. Two is they are English-speaking and most forgiving of people who are launching something over there. So if I do something, if Robert and I in our presentation do something that doesn't work right, they'll let us know, but they'll do it kindly, and then we won't do it when we come to Broadway, the USA.
Right. So, was that your first trip to Australia? You've done it before.
No, I did it for Lethal Generosity a year ago, and 2 years ago, Robert and I launched Age of Context there.
Oh, okay. So that's a regular stopping point. You really meant that when you said off-Broadway.
Yeah, they are my off-Broadway. We open in Australia, and if we suck, we might as well find out to a smaller audience.
So what lessons do the Australians give you about the transformations you're talking about? Any feedback from them about what works and what won't work?
They, for the most part, loved what we're talking about. they voice some strong concerns about loss of privacy, dehumanization, and other ways that this technology goes too far. We didn't write a book about whether this is good or bad, although my co-author certainly thinks it's good. We wrote a book that says this is happening, and if you're in business, you ought to pay. Are we on the record? Because these are very good answers.
Yeah, this is all being recorded. We're fine. Keep going.
the book is designed to tell business decision makers what is coming down the line so that they can prepare. Whether there are good or bad repercussions, it's going to happen. We think the good will vastly eclipse the bad, but as has happened on Facebook and in driving and in flying, terrible things do happen. And they will happen in the AR/VR world that's coming.
Until we get the bugs and the kinks out.
Well, even once we have bugs and kinks, planes will crash, cars will collide. I've heard rumors that even political campaigns can be hacked by foreign powers.
We have heard that recently, haven't we?
Yes, yes.
So why don't you just briefly sketch out what is this fourth transformation that you talk about? And you make a point of changing the name, and it's a paradigm shift in the name of the paradigm shift. You're calling it a transformation rather than a paradigm shift. What is it, and how do we get there?
Well, the book begins with the very original words, "in the beginning." And for us, we didn't get biblical. We said in the beginning there were mainframes. We begin with the perspective is back in the 60s, there were mainframes. And a very small elite group got to speak to them by using punch cards and punching holes in cards. The first transformation brought us to the desktop, where we could talk to these new digital machines with programming code such as DOS, and then knowledge workers could use them, and more people could use it, but it was still pretty limited and pretty expensive. Then came the Mac and point and click, and now just about everybody could use computers and did, and could talk to and could make things happening just by clicking on objects on a screen. This was pretty cool, but then 10 years later, along came the iPhone, and now anyone could use technology everywhere, and they didn't even have to point and click. They could touch and swipe. So that brings us now to a fourth transformation where we don't have to hunch over a phone, which is quite good and is still the center of our digital lives and will be the center of our digital life for a while, but sometime in the next 10 years, most people, we argue, will be moving from the handset to the headset. And we'll be doing that because the experience will be superior, our ability to learn, to communicate, to work will be better, and we will be moving around in a much more natural world where we're standing upright and looking through our glasses and moving things around by motion with our eyes, or in the slightly more distant future by brain waves themselves, which have started to be being used in medical apps.
Now, we've been hearing about virtual reality for years, and I remember going back to Jaron Lanier and the VR goggles of years ago and the gloves, and, you know, it seems like it's been almost 10 years, maybe more, since that first came on the scene. What's made it become front and center in your mind now?
Jaron Lanier and what you were talking about was in the early 1990s, so
okay,
it's
so
more,
it's even more than 10 years.
And by the way, augmented reality started at Boeing in the early 1990s as a better way of wiring the wings to the new jumbo jet, a term they coined called the 747, which was the state of the art then. Before we get to VR and Jaron, It's interesting that for the first time in a long time, the enterprise is ahead of consumer in adoption, and it's AR, not VR, that's happening. What happened recently is a failure that Robert gets kidded about a whole lot, and that was the anticipation that we'd all be walking around with Google Glass, which turned out to be too geeky, too expensive, too limited in battery, too limited in applications, and probably should never have been marketed as a consumer device, particularly since it never got past the developer phase. But that started a lot of very smart people backed by very smart money to start realizing what could be done if you took the idea of Google Glass and you made it better. Now there's at least 9 headsets out that are far better than what Google Glass offered. Most of them are less expensive, even those that are developers' versions going to enterprise users. So that's what's happened. Along with that has been a whole lot of really creative software people, a lot of them coming out of the gaming industry, who are creating studios where they're painting in midair with products. They're creating new shopping experiences in places like Lowe's and at McDonald's, where kids can play with VR glasses in selected, I want to say stores, but I guess it's joints if it's McDonald's, and have some fun while waiting. Where we know of airline companies that are thinking of installing VR while you're waiting for your plane to arrive so you can see neat places you can fly to next time.
It sounds a lot like the technology that was imagined in the Tom Cruise movie Minority Report.
Yes. That's what you said when I was on the show last time and the time before. And yes, it's all true. The dystopian and onerous aspects of it may not be true, but yeah, we can only hope, but we will find out if we live so long.
So what's going to make the this technology jump? You said that a lot of it's being driven by developers who started in gaming. What's going to make it jump from gaming to real-world business applications? What do you see as being the tipping point for that?
Well, it has jumped. The book is written in the first year, and we're now crawling out of the VR-AR evolutionary swamp. The industry is starting to grow little tiny legs, and we're slithering into drier and higher land. But the book has over 40 business applications. We look at 4 very large verticals: retail, the enterprise, education, and health, where there is a great deal happening. We're still in a period where devices are expensive, they're clumsy, they're still connected, but all of that's changing. I don't believe any industry is defined by a single moment. Automobiles, E.C. Durier created the event when he created a horseless carriage in 1870-something. But mini cars came afterwards, and right now we've got a market that's filling up with hardware, and now software is coming. If there is a single event that I would pay a great deal of attention to, it'll be the 10th anniversary of the iPhone, when Apple, which has not been an innovative leader in recent years, launches its 10th anniversary iPhone, which Robert has intelligence that says the phone will be entirely clear, the battery will be a little black tape-like strip on the bottom of it, and it will connect to augmented reality glasses that Robert started talking about 3 months ago, and now Steve Cook is following Robert's leadership in hinting what's coming. So we think Apple, that I think the iPhone 6 sold 13 million in its first week. We think this new phone will probably sell about 20 million. It'll cause an acceleration in interest in others. It'll cause competing companies to try to leapfrog forward. As far as Magic Leap goes, they could be very big, or they could be a train wreck based on recent news reports that say they faked the demos that have made people like me drool.
So you talked about the four areas that you mentioned in the book that are benefiting most from the transformation: the retail, the enterprise, health, and learning. Do you have some examples of applications and implications in those areas?
Pick one.
Retail.
Or I'm going to have to recite to you over 140 words, Steve. So, okay.
Give me an idea of what's going on.
In selected Lowe's home improvement stores, you go in, and if you want to design your kitchen or your bathroom, they have a holodeck there for you. You go in there and you click on a picture of a sink. You see the exact dimensions of your own kitchen. You see what it'll look like with that sink. You'll see it with brass fixtures or burnished chrome fixtures. You'll look at the counters. You'll change it from the gray granite to the stainless steel. You'll see what different refrigerators look at it. You'll be able to play with different floor treatments, and then from there get the products with precise measurements. Aisle 411 is working with Tango. Tango is a joint effort for AR on a Lenovo phone. You can now go to a mall and say, where are the blue jeans? And you'll see an internal map to four places where there are blue jeans. Of course, your phone is going to know your sizes along with your credit card number and all that. So you will then be able to follow a blue line down the aisles to where the blue jeans you want most exist. To bring marketing into it, pretty soon you're going to be able to have your favorite celebrity escort you to the different blue jeans in the mall that you might want to see, and along the way point out other things that might go well with the new blue jeans that you're buying. So that's a couple for retail. In the enterprise, there's a great deal happening. There's a company called Dockery who's making a hard hat that's also augmented reality. And then when linemen go up a pole or are working to put out a fire on an oil rig, they can see exactly what it will look like properly and therefore lessen the damages done. One of the more boring but interesting ones in the enterprise is logistics is changing. They're using AR instead of clipboards and checkboxes to make sure the orders are filled. DHL has done a couple of tests on it, and they're getting from a 7.5 to a 20% increase in efficiency. Numbers like that are, of course, quite interesting. In health, you can now take if you're a doctor, a tour through a healthy living human heart and see where everything works and how everything works. Of course, anatomy students at Case Western now don't use cadavers. They see the organs that they will be sometimes repairing in you or someone you love in augmented reality, where they can see a healthy organ rather than a dead one, and they can walk around it. They can see the pancreatic location in relationship to the kidneys. So we're creating health education. I can think of nothing where education won't be improved with this. And that I don't just mean public school education. I just mentioned medical. If you want to teach history, you and I probably learned the Battle of Hastings, 1066, right? You know that number?
I do remember that.
Do you have a clue what happened at Hastings?
Not at all.
Me neither. But wouldn't it be better if when you learned, instead of having to remember that question 7 is going to be 1066, wouldn't it be better if you actually could visit the Battle of Hastings to see the blood and the gore, to know who fought who, to know why England was saved by this event? Because I have no idea how it happened. You can now take students, and it's being done in the U.S. and in Europe, on tours of Buckingham Palace and the White House. You can see the Grand Canyon. Remember the old viewfinders that you used to use when you were a kid? There is, the same company now has a VR version. So now when you see the Grand Canyon, you're not looking just through a screen. You're immersed in it. It's all around you. You can feel the walls around you. You can feel the changes. Well, no, there are technologies. You will be able to feel the changes as you walk from the cold top to the warm bottom of the canyon. Anywhere you look, you can change the experience of learning so that you are immersed in it. You are not just sitting and watching it. AR and VR remove the barrier between of a screen. You're no longer sitting passively and watching. You're in it. You can walk around something. If you and I go to a movie, you and I can sit side by side yet experience different stories as we watch the movie from different perspectives.
Yeah, what do you think about the current application that seems pretty popular is news organizations creating virtual reality story packages that you can immerse yourself in? There was one that comes to my mind is the battle for, I think it was for Fallujah, that the New York Times created, where, you know, their photographers actually had to get right up on the front lines, and it's 360-degree immersive technology. You watch the battle, and you're literally there with them. How do you feel about that?
I think it's amazing. I think it's exciting. So far, the Times has only used Google Cardboard, which is literally a throwaway version of virtual reality, and the cost of headsets make it necessary to use something this inexpensive. I'm fearful that that experience will turn some people off. There's a latency that causes seasickness with it. And I think that Google in the next year will move up to the new Daydream, which is a lot better than Cardboard, although it has some distance to go.
Daydream is a headset.
It's a headset that costs $79 instead of free or $20 as Cardboard does.
Okay, so that's getting a little bit closer to a price point that consumers, you know, might consider that's a discretionary purchase I can handle.
Yeah, I am the poor starving author and Robert is the rich and famous one. So he has...
My sympathies are with you because I'm a poor starving author too.
Yeah. Well, I'll compete with you. I'd rather not compete with you in this category, but...
Not a problem.
Right now, Robert has the HTC Vive, which is phenomenal for VR. It's still tethered. It's got some problems with it. And he also has a HoloLens, which costs $3,000, which is pretty terrific. I can't afford these, and therefore I cannot experience as much of this at home as I would like to. But a year from now, I will. Google Daydream will probably be a year from now, $49.95. Some company we haven't heard of yet is going to come up with somebody. Somebody just came out with a relatively inexpensive VR headset for the Apple. I'm forgetting the name of it, but it came out this week, and I don't know how good it is. It's about $300. All of this a year from now will be subjected to the relentless force of Moore's Law. They will be smaller, better, faster, and a lot cheaper. As this happens, more and more people will adopt. What was your question that I started answering? I'm so far off course.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to go through a few points of the book. And in part three, you divided the book into three parts. In part three, you focus on the risks, the potential for lost privacy, even lost jobs, and then what interested me, the ability to discern truth from illusion. And as you mentioned earlier, we've just gone through a presidential campaign where truth and illusion had and continue to have center stage. You know, we're still debating what is true. Are there any facts that can be agreed upon? What can we expect in terms of the risks? What are going to be the beneficial aspects of this fourth transformation? And then what are the real risks that we face in terms of things we might lose?
You did a good job of answering that question, Steve. Privacy is something that at least we who are over age 40 seem to hold pretty sacred.
And yet my wife always says, you know, that ship has sailed. You know, forget about worrying about privacy. It's already gone. Every time you click allow on, you know, the latest game app, you've just given up a lot of your privacy.
Yeah, but now we're going to be giving it up to the point that the person you're talking to or the artificial intelligence is watching you will be able to know when you're bored by what your eyes do, will be able to know if you're excited by your heartbeat. So your loss of privacy now is going to be a lot larger than it is, will be a lot larger in the future than it is today. And this isn't going to be stoppable. On one hand, some of this stuff will make you healthier. On the other hand, it will be nice to know when someone who's talking to you is lying. Unfortunately, they, wearing the same glasses as you, will know when you're lying too. So there is going to be a radical transparency that is conducted by technology and not by choice. This concerns me. I don't know the repercussions. This election, the hacking that we're making slightly veiled reference to is really not an AR/VR thing, but it is certainly true that in the future, there is going to be greater capabilities to mess with your reality. Augmented reality, which we've so far talked less about, gives you the ability to replace what is real in front of you with things that are artificial. This gives you the ability to, if you walk down the street and there's a homeless person, you can make that homeless person look like a very cute and affectionate puppy dog. You can even pet this puppy dog. You can hear it going because it likes you. And then, of course, you're having a more pleasant experience, but is that desensitizing you to the fact there are millions of people without homes in America?
And are you invading the personal space of the homeless person that you're petting because you think it's a dog?
Well, you're not really...
Not really petting them? Okay.
Your hand is moving in there. You're not going to... because the homeless person could bite you, and what would you do then? The point is that we will be able to make a bare and boring wall adorned in bright colors or have a window which aliens come through periodically and you can zap with a hand gesture. You're going to be able to do whatever you want with reality. You're going to be able to replace things that are not there. This allows you to do something. You and I could be playing chess right now, and when you make a move over there with a virtual set that's on your table with gestures, I will see that move in my set over here. This is really cool. When you and I are having this interview, it'll be like you and I are sitting in the same place, talking with each other. We can feel each other through haptic technology. We can hear what's going on behind us between new stereoscopic sound that will be surrounding us rather than just covering our ears. So we begin that book, that chapter, with a quote from Edward Albee's Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Truth and illusion, George, you don't know the difference. We may be entering a world where some people don't know the difference between truth and illusion, and Robert and I are not exactly joined at the hip on this. I personally do not think that's a good thing. I do not think it's good for us to be able to block out everything which is unpleasant.
Or certainly block out that which is real.
Yeah, well, considering recent presidential elections, I do see an upside of that too.
Well, yes. Yes, but there again, you know, I mean, this technology, just like the technology that some people are alleging has been used for bad ends in this election, it can only get worse if people can actually manipulate what you think is reality. We've already seen it with, you know, the outrage over faked Photoshopped
fake
images, fake news. It happens already it's likely to continue to happen. I wonder if you could speculate about what the next transformation is going to be. I remember reading Ray Kurzweil's book about the singularity, about implanted digital intelligence down the road, nanobots and things like that. Do you think that's going to be the next transformation or something else?
Nanotechnology is going great guns right now. There is a nanobot that is going to be swimming around in, it's in testing right now in human bodies, going through the bloodstream, looking for cancer cells, and then reaching over and zapping a single cancer cell before it begins to metastasize. Stuff like that is pretty remarkable. We write in the book about nanotechnologies that will be attached to the back of the retina to give people with meticular degeneration the ability to see again, at least partially, which affects, I think, 29 million people on Earth. So there is that going on. I don't want to comment on the singularity. What I do think the next transformation will be is a natural extension of what we're talking about, which begins in the fourth transformation. And that is the ability to use technology to make things happen simply with brainwaves. In the fourth transformation, we're seeing amputees being able to pick up a pin with an artificial limb. We're seeing formerly blind people play the piano. Or still blind people use assistants to play the piano. So we're beginning to see people use broken parts of their body by brainwave. We're curing schizophrenia with brainwave. But it's going to be expensive and for special cases. 10 years from today, I think the next transformation may involve people walking around and doing everything they want just by thinking about it. And the repercussions of that, I don't even want to get started on. I'm here to boost the book I just wrote instead.
Not the book that you're going to write.
Well, 10 years from now, I'll be 82. Maybe my grandson will pick up where I left off. I'm not sure.
Well, whenever the next one comes out, we'll probably have the conversation in virtual space or augmented reality of some sort.
Yeah, and it'll begin with that Robert Scoble opener. Who are you?
Shell, it's been great to talk to you. Thanks for joining us on the Middle Chamber Books podcast.
Thank you, Steve. It's been a pleasure to be back again.
Shell Israel is the co-author with Robert Scoble of The Fourth Transformation, How Augmented Reality and Artificial Intelligence Will Change Everything. It's available on the Kindle and as a trade paperback through Amazon. That'll do it for this edition of the Middle Chamber Books and Music Podcast. Be sure to check out our books at middlechamberbooks.com. If you have any comments or suggestions about the program, you can write to me. It's steve@middlechamberbooks.com. We produce these programs in the studios of Professional Podcasts. It's one of our Lubetkin Media companies here in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. We're on the web at beingthemedia.com. For Shell Israel, for everyone else here at the Middle Chamber Books and Music Podcast, this is Steve Lubetkin. Thanks for joining us. And before I forget, our PodSafe music comes to us from the Indianapolis Jazz Orchestra. It's called Cook the Books. Appreciate you being with us, and we'll see you again on the next edition of the podcast. Until then, we'll see you out there on the net. Take good care.